Good morning to you. It's 11 a.m. Sunday morning. It's the 17th of September 2017. I hope I find you well. It's a grim old morning here in Manchester. It's dry for the time being, but it's a bit on the grim side. My name is Richie Allen. This is Sunday View, broadcasting live right now on davidicke.com. We're on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Be taking a look at the Sunday newspapers, so I will, the front pages and some of the stories within in your company. Thanks for joining me. And if you'd like to join in, you need only tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's the Twitter handle for the programme. Couldn't be easier. Yeah, don't put on any music just yet, Richie. Right. Yeah, tweet at Richie Allen Show. It's the most reliable way to communicate with the programme while it's on air. All right, good to be chatting with you. Let's do it then. Sunday View for Sunday, September 17th.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Great stuff. Lots to get through. We will, of course, be talking about the attempted terror attack in London on Friday. There's news on that. We'll also talk more about George Hook, the Irish radio presenter, as well. On your Sunday View on davidicke.com.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Yeah, George Hook, that's a huge story, that. It's got implications for broadcasters and writers the world over. You might think it's a localised story in Dublin, Ireland. It isn't. It's got, as I said, ramifications for broadcasters and for freedom of speech the world over. More on that a bit later on anyway. I love the fact that you've joined me. Thanks for doing so. Let's just crack the bejesus on with it then. Right. Couple of things I'd like to say before we go on. First and foremost, we were 3 years old on Friday. Confused one or two people. I've been making programmes like this for quite a number of years. But this programme itself is 3 years old. Well, it was on Friday. A lot of people got in touch with the show over the last few days to say nice things about it and the guests. Thanks for doing that. I really appreciate it. And we raised a few quid as well over the last couple of days. I think we brought in somewhere in the region of about £400 in donations, which were much needed, I don't mind telling you. So thank you to everybody who put a couple of quid in the meter for this programme over the last few days. I really appreciate that. And thanks for listening to it. I'm not a modest man. I said this the other day. I'm not, you know, a braggart and, you know, either. There's an in-between. The programme is about the men and women who come on it. It's important only in that sense that it's a platform for people. There are other platforms like this, but I'm very proud of this one, and thanks for listening, thanks for supporting it. Couple of things I did mention on Thursday, but I want to reiterate. A couple of guys in Manchester, Hayden Hewitt at liveleak.com and Beyond Vision TV, and my great mate Tez Terry Howell in Salford, whom I go watching rugby league with and cricket. Great guy, huge help to the programme as well. Mightn't have mentioned Tez on Thursday, should have done. Great guy and very important to me in this city. And this morning, Jackie in Oz sent a nice message about the fourth year of the programme. We are entering the fourth year. Jackie in Oz, how are you? She said her fella Kim is a new listener to the programme. Kim, mate, thanks for listening. Really appreciate that. I hope you'll get something out of it in the coming weeks and months. Now, there's been a lot in the news this morning, understandably, about the so-called terror attack on Friday at Parsons Green in South London. Two people now are in custody as of this morning. It was a bizarre thing, wasn't it? A bucket in a little bag with some lights hanging out of it. Very amateurish it looked anyway. Why would... Do you know what I was thinking? Why would ISIS take responsibility for something amateurish like that? Now, I don't think this is funny. I don't find it funny that people get caught up in these things and hurt and killed and maimed. So don't think I do. I just find it bizarre that, you know, let's just take on face value that ISIS are responsible for it. Let's take that on face value just for a minute, right? You'd be kind of inclined, if you were the ISIS communications guy, to say, no, we had nothing to do with that. Like I said, I don't think it's funny. I just think it's very bizarre. Enda Brady reports for Sky News, and he has the latest on this because, as I said, a second person seemingly was arrested overnight. Here's Enda Brady.
Well, Stephen, we had a brief statement from the Metropolitan Police this morning, first thing confirming a second arrest had been made just before midnight, 10 to 12 last night, in Hounslow, a residential area in West London. A 21-year-old man arrested under Section 41 of the Terrorism Act. Now, he was brought into custody immediately to a South London police station, and that is where yesterday's arrested 18-year-old was brought by Kent police. He was arrested in the port area in Dover in Kent. So two suspects in custody, an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old. The investigation is continuing, and the police are still appealing for anyone out there with any pictures or video evidence that they may have filmed on mobile phones to come forward and give it to officers to help their investigation move on. But it is a fast-paced investigation, and that's as much as we've heard from the police so far today. A second arrest in West London just before midnight.
Yeah, and the first arrest was of a man known to security. Here's an interesting thing. You mightn't have considered this. Maybe you have considered it because you consume programs like this. But the guys arrested for it, if they're ever named, they probably will be named. But if they are ever tried, that trial will be in secret. It won't be in the full glare of the UK media. I bet you had forgotten about that. I bet you some of you have forgotten about that. This is the weird world we live in now. They can try these guys in secret and then later tell you somebody was found guilty, somebody was sentenced to 10 years or whatever, and you just have to believe it. Yeah. Now, the UK Home Secretary is a statuesque woman called Amber Rudd. Don't even start. Here she is on the Andrew Marr show this morning, the Home Secretary Amber Rudd. Now, she spoke about a lot, including Boris Johnson and Brexit, but I'm not going to get into any of what she said about Johnson. We'll talk about Johnson a bit later on. Here she is answering Andrew Marr. He asks her, obviously, about the second arrest. This is what she said.
This has been a year like no other. We've seen, as you said earlier, five serious attacks and six that were foiled by the police. And the police are getting on with doing their operation today. They're working closely with the security services. I had an update this morning. They've made two arrests, as you said, and they'll be working hard today to see what else they can find out about this attacker.
Now, so-called Islamic State has suggested that there were several other unexploded devices still at large. Have you any information or reassurance on that at all?
We don't. It is inevitable that so-called Islamic State or Daesh will reach in and try and claim responsibility. We have no evidence to suggest that yet. But as this unfolds and as we do our investigations, as the police do their investigations, we will make sure that we find out exactly how he was radicalised, if we can.
Very interesting. There's absolutely no evidence Islamic State was behind it, said Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary. Now, whatever you think of politicians, and I have certainly opined a lot on politics and the lack of necessity for it. I don't engage, basically, with the political system. I don't believe in it. But it's interesting, she's been very honest there. But you wouldn't know that if you followed the UK and world media reporting of what's happened on Friday, or what did happen on Friday. It's being widely reported that ISIS terror cells are operating in the UK doing these things. Now, they might be. And there's some evidence that because of what's happened in Syria and in Libya and elsewhere, there's some evidence that some pretty bad dudes are coming into the country. So I'm not denying that, but I'm just saying, it's telling that Rudd said, no, there's no evidence really. Right? Just thought we'd pause it there while we reiterated that. It goes on.
If we can.
Can I ask whether it's true that the Daesh information that's coming out at the moment is always as dangerous as you suggested?
Well, yes, we think it is. I mean, the way these particularly young people...
In a sense, do you take it seriously? When they say there are other unexploded devices, do you take this seriously or is this propaganda?
Well, my focus has always been on making sure there is less material out there from Daesh to radicalise people. Perhaps claiming responsibility might do that as well. But the police will be responsible for looking into whether these connections are actually correct or not.
Are there more resources coming for counter-terrorism operations?
Absolutely there are. I mean, today we've announced £24 million £100 million of new money, which will go to counter-terrorism operations across the country where it's needed, particularly to support operations where they're protecting people in public places. We've made sure the counter-terrorism budget has been able to expand overall from 2015 to 20. It's gone up from 11.5 to 15 billion. We're absolutely committed to making sure the security services and the police have the right resources.
Yeah. Now, she said they're committed to preventing the material. And this is very important. We did say in the summer, or I said in the summer, this is going to be a big deal in this parliament. Okay, the attempt to crack down on online extremism and to blame radical jihadism for whatever measures are introduced. Measures that will impact upon men and women challenging the establishment narrative on everything, but who will be deemed as extremists, caught up in the whatever. And I'm not going to play the clip again, but I did play a clip, it's a very important clip, of Theresa May speaking to John Humphreys on Radio 4 a few years back. May was Home Secretary then, I think she was. And in fact, I know she was. And Humphreys pressed May to give some sort of a clear definition of what extremism is. And May wouldn't do it. And you're getting the same with Rudd now, you see. We've got to prevent people accessing material from the likes of Islamic State. But ultimately, they want people to find it difficult to access material from the brave men and women whom research the or investigate the establishment narrative and point out the massive holes in it. The sorts of men and women we're lucky enough to hear from on this programme. That's where it's all going. She said loads of money for counter-terrorism. What does that mean exactly? I'll tell you what I think it means. I spent the afternoon yesterday watching a bit of telly and having a cold brew. And I'll tell you about that in a minute, what the counter-terrorism means and the money for it. Before that, the former head of UKIP, the former UKIP leader, Nigel Farage, he was speaking with Fox News yesterday and he wants the army to get involved. Eh? He wants the army involved and he wants the police to be armed. Listen to Farage on Fox News.
We hear the Prime Minister after each of these attacks saying we're going to step up and we're going to put more resources in. I don't think at any stage of this that our leaders have really contemplated the scale of the problem that we face. And I think part of the reason for that is that they themselves are responsible for much of it. You know, I was saying a couple of years ago that we must get the military involved to leave the police freer to get on with things. We're now hearing that finally, perhaps that may happen. And the other thing I find extraordinary is we still, in the whole of this country, only have just over 6,000 police officers who've got weapons. Mm-hmm. That's right. All. The rest of them are not routinely armed. And if you think back to the London Bridge attacks, where the terrorist got out of a van, a police officer on duty with a baton went up, confronted them, was stabbed. He survived, I'm pleased to say. Now, had he had either a gun or at least a taser, right, he could have stopped that attack happening in Borough Market. So I don't think we're gearing up quickly enough to this. I think we're always behind the curve.
Nigel Farage. Now, look, lest we descend into some whirlpool of constantly repeating what we say, but sometimes it's important. How many times have I been saying on programmes like this, they serve the same masters. Let's get the army involved. That should be a terrifying prospect for every man, woman, and a child old enough to understand what's going on. Let's place the army in the high streets of UK cities. Right? This is the problem reaction solution scenario, brilliantly analysed and written about by David for many, many, many years. The terror threat level is at critical at the moment. Now, this is funny, right? It is. You've got to laugh, I think, sometimes. How have we allowed ourselves to reach a point where we live and make decisions by colour-coded terror charts. Like, it's enough to drive you insane that so many people can't see the folly of it. I mean, it's lunacy, isn't it? It's lunacy. We're at critical now, which means an attack is imminent. So the government are saying, with the support of the security services, an attack is imminent. That's imminent. Any second now, terrorists are going to kill you or somebody like you or somebody near you or in a city near you. And what all of this really means, as I mentioned earlier on, I was at home yesterday afternoon. I was briefly on Twitter. I don't spend very much time on social media. I don't like it. I prefer human contact. And I really do. I spend very little time on it. But I was on Twitter yesterday for a minute. I was looking at various football scores and stuff coming in. And I couldn't not notice that a number of people, families, were going out yesterday. And they were going to train stations to either go to cities for football or rugby, or if not for sport, they were going to the countryside to walk in the UK's amazing National Trust parks, which is something the future Mrs. Allen and I do on a regular basis. And they were reporting on Twitter yesterday that they were confronted by armed to the teeth police wearing balaclavas. And this was everywhere. And the message coming from Amber Rudd and Nigel Farage is get used to it. Get used to it. The army will soon be deployed to UK streets, and it's not going to be a temporary measure either. France, as far as I know, well, Paris anyway, is still under a state of emergency. Correct me if I'm wrong. It might have been lifted in the last few weeks, unknown to me, but for well over a year, France, or Paris, again I should repeat, Paris was under a state of emergency, which meant that when the future Mrs. Allen went back to Paris to get connecting trains to the city where she was brought up, when she went back to Paris with her company, she was confronted by robocops everywhere. Get used to it. And I believe they know what's coming. They know what's coming. They know that folks are beginning to see through the lies. And that isn't scaremongering. You know, those tweets I saw yesterday were from people with seemingly no interest in programmes like this. None. But they were expressing their shock at the robocops they were bumping into as they went to places like, one guy was at Ashton Gate. Now, I don't know if Bristol City were playing or if Bristol Rugby were playing, but he was at Ashton Gate. Guy couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. People wearing balaclavas, helmets where you can't see the faces of the policemen. They don't look like policemen. I saw it here. I went to an airport a few weeks back, to Manchester Airport, to fly to Southampton, and I was confronted by balaclava wearing Kevlar coated stormtroopers. And they don't have much of a sense of humour either. I like to say things to these people. I don't swear with them, I don't insult them, but I like to say things to them like, this is all a bit ridiculous, isn't it? They don't like it very much. This is dystopia. Dystopia is what it is. Right, George Hook. We'll leave George Hook for a minute. It's 18 minutes past here. I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I am going to go through the Sunday newspaper front pages, probably briefly. And after that, I want to talk about George Hook, who's been suspended by the Irish broadcaster News Talk, which is a commercial station, but a national talk station based in Dublin. I know them well. I know their managing director quite well. Came close to working for them 3.5 years ago. We'll tell you more about George Hook a little bit later on in the programme. But for now, though, quick break, back in a minute.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with Orgone Energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And indeed, do bookmark DavidIke.com/headlines, where the stories I covered today are covered in great depth and great analysis there as well. A few tweets coming in. Let's read out a few of the old tweets there. Good morning, Anne Selly in Cheltenham. Anne says, Richie, it's long been predicted the troops would be on the streets because of incoming solar events, etc. Example, September 23rd, says Anne. You'll have to tell me more about that, Anne. Shona is in South Africa. Good morning, Richie. Damn these time differences, she says. Late checking in. Lovely weather here, she said. We've had nice rains. Catherine has tweeted me a Daily Mail story, which the headline of the Mail story is this the end of the line for train tickets? And Catherine points out, and this is very, very interesting. She says, this attack comes at a time when they are trying to bring facial recognition in for train tickets. It's very good, Catherine. And you've got to contemplate these things when you have incidents like we saw on Friday. David has been saying for years and years and years, to his credit, look at the solutions offered in the wake of the sorts of things that happened on Friday. Look at the solutions. Dean Smith tweets, it'll get to the point where they will chip every man, woman and child for our protection from terrorists. And Kim Erswell tweets, when Farage said our leaders have to get a grip, he made a crucial mistake. We don't actually have any real leaders. And Fluffles agrees with my point that they serve the same masters. He says, exactly, they all drink from the same water hole. Good morning to These Are the Damned on Twitter. Good morning to Brian Brew, who says, it's all very strange, Richie. It is very strange what happened on Friday. But not because I'm censoring myself. I've never censored myself. You can only speculate when you see things like Friday. You can only say, yes, that looks really bizarre, that. What you can't do, because, you know, there are Muppets calling themselves journalists in the independent media who will come out and make all sorts of proclamations about what happened on Friday and will tell you what happened, and they will tell you it's a fact, but they couldn't possibly know because they weren't there. The journalistic thing to do is to say, that looks very weird, that. I'd like there to be a real investigation into that. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to believe everything we are being told. That's the proper thing to do. But outside of that, I can't do anything else. What can I say? I don't know, you know. Good morning to Paul Alawi. Paul says, good morning, Richie. Congratulations for making the 3-year milestone. Thank you, Paul. That is greatly appreciated. So let's look at the papers then. Let's look at the papers before we talk about George Hook. This is Sunday View. It is live. It's exactly 24 and a half minutes past 11. That's UK time as we record this. There might be developments on the bomb on Friday, if it was a bomb. later on, so don't blame me. We do this live between 11 and sometime between 11 and 12. The Sunday Observer front page, the headline, Police Search Surrey House as Teenager Held Over Tube Bomb. So obviously, the papers are a little bit behind in terms of they went, the papers were put to bed late last night. They've been printed. They're out there. They say an 18-year-old man is being questioned as police search a house in Surrey. Now, there's been a further arrest, right? That's the Sunday Observer. Detectives are saying they're keeping an open mind on whether more than one person was involved in the attack or not. We did hear the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, speaking to Andrew Marr from the BBC a bit earlier on, saying that we don't know what to believe at the moment, basically. Also in the Sunday Observer, there is a report that senior Conservatives have branded the UK Prime Minister Theresa May as too weak after she refused to sack Boris Johnson over his Brexit comments in yesterday's Telegraph newspaper. Now, we'll come to the comments made by Johnson yesterday shortly. We'll chat about that and we'll hear from Vince Cable, the leader of the Liberal Democrats. So since the papers came out, remember, there has been another arrest. The Sunday Times, the headline is Terror Police Raid Homes of Honours Couple. Well, apparently Ronald and Penelope Jones run a foster home of sorts. They are carers and they have recently looked after young refugees from Syria and Iraq. And some newspapers are leading with photographs of Ronald and Penelope Jones receiving MBEs from the Queen in 2010. They have fostered at least 268 children. I wonder, do Ronald and Penelope have any idea how many of those 268 children were taken from loving mothers and fathers because the state deemed them possibly guilty of future emotional harm? But that's another story. Anyway, that's the home being searched, or that is the home that was searched overnight. There has been another arrest. So that's in the Sunday Times. It's in the Sunday Express as well. Bomb raid on foster home. Same again. The Sunday Express claims in their front page story that... in another story on the front page of the Sunday Express, they say that the arrogance displayed by the European Union and the recent comments of Jean-Claude Juncker, the president of the EU Commission, the Express says that the comments made by Juncker and the arrogance of the EU generally has put paid to any chances of a second referendum. So the Express is saying that UK people are sick to the back teeth of the EU, which of course wants complete union and the total eradication of borders, the dissolution of sovereignty. Juncker wants all this by 2025, complete fiscal, economical, political and military union. That's what he wants. I'd love the Sunday Express to be right, I really would. Now, the Star on Sunday, we don't normally give any mention to the Star on Sunday because their stories are usually celebrity-based stories or Z-list celebrity-based stories. I never know who these people are on the front page of the Star on Sunday. Honest to God. But then again, I'm a 42-year-old. My time is gone, basically. My time is gone. So the big brash headline on the Star on Sunday, Tube Bomber May Have Been a Refugee. Right. So there's a lot of coverage of Friday's attack, if that is what it was. Same for the Sunday Mirror. Again, a picture of Ronald and Penelope Jones, the couple who run the foster home. The Mail on Sunday. Let's move on to a different story. The Mail on Sunday. The front page, Tories at war over Boris move to oust PM. Tories at war over Boris move to oust PM. So what's this all about? That headline. The paper, the Sunday Mail, the Mail on Sunday says, allies of Theresa May have accused Boris Johnson, who is the UK Foreign Secretary. They've said he's treacherous. They've accused him of treason after he staged what the Mail on Sunday has called an open revolt against Theresa May's Brexit plans. The paper also reports on the latest update into the bucket bomber. The bucket bomber. There were 6 pages of coverage in the Mail on Sunday of the bucket bomber. So back to Boris. Why is he a traitor? Why is he guilty of treason? Why is it treachery? Well, he wrote an article for the Telegraph newspaper yesterday, 4,000 words. Boris wrote 4,000 words for the Telegraph. What did he say? Well, to synopsise it, to summarise it, he said that if the UK was to remain in the single market and the customs union after 2019, it would make a mockery of the result of the referendum June last year. We voted no. We voted leave. 52% of the country voted leave. Johnson said, if there's any hanging on in single market, customs union, it's a mockery of the result. He did argue that the UK would be roughly £350 million better off once it had settled its accounts with the EU. And he said it would be fine if a lot of that money was spent on the health service. There's a lot in the article. A lot of jingoism. A lot of chest-beating, tub-thumping nationalism. No bad thing, I don't think. I'm no fan of any of these people. But no bad thing. Johnson is basically saying, we get out on our terms, there's no hanging around with any of these unions, there's no compromising, we do it hard, and then we do our individual deals with individual countries, and we do what's best for the UK. Now, the papers are saying today that this is effectively treason, because Theresa May will give a speech in Florence next Friday, this coming Friday, where she will lay out finally, according to the newspapers, she will lay out what it is that she and the UK wants from Brexit. So it's a massive speech next Friday, huge interest in it. She's allegedly going to emphasise the UK's special partnership with the European Union. That's what she's going to do. So the papers are saying Bojo is a traitor. Now, they're arguing over the figures again. The figure of 350 million quid a week for the NHS is back on the table. This was very contentious. You'll remember the Brexit bus driving around the country with the big figure writ large on the side of the bus. 350 million quid for the National Health Service if we get out of the European Union. Now, Vince Cable, the leader of the Liberal Democrats. Now, the Liberal Democrats is like the Judeans People's Front. There's not very many people in it, and it doesn't really matter. But Cable has said that the £350 million a week is a lie. So says the BBC. The BBC itself, on its own website, the disgraceful BBC, the disgraceful national broadcaster, which of course is totally pro-EU, and as I've told you many times on this programme, has taken several million euro a year from Brussels. Well, Auntie, as the Beeb is affectionately known, also leads with stories on its TV and radio shows today that the £350 million is a lie. It is not a lie. It's, and I've done the research on this. Excuse me, let me tell you. It's the figure before money is rebated back to the UK. So you might call it disingenuous, but it's not a lie. The real figure, minus rebates and all of that, the net contribution from the UK to the European Union each week is, drumroll, maestro please, it's around £250 million. Which is £13 billion a year. So the truth, with zero spin on it, even though I, of course, would be absolutely committed to the complete disbandment of the dissolution of the European Union, the absolute truth is, no spin, the UK sends net £13 billion a year to Brussels. Yes, it does. To effectively be part of an undemocratic, uncompetitive, tyrannical cabal, which is the biggest stepping stone ever to a world government. That's the truth of it. Imagine what you could do with £13 billion a year. Right? Anyway. So is Johnson serious? Is Boris Johnson positioning himself for a leadership bid? Does he want to force Theresa May to sack him? Does he want to do that? Because by forcing her to sack him, those who want a hard Brexit would align, naturally align with Johnson. Or could it be a double bluff? is somebody trying to destroy the Conservative Party from within and pave the way for a Labour surge? Because Jeremy Corbyn is a traitor, as I've pointed out on this programme many, many times. He's also a liar and a flip-flopper. Keir Starmer, John McDonnell, they all want to stay in the single market, meaning that free movement of people will never end and Brexit won't be worth the paper it's printed on. That's the truth. So is it a double bluff? Are they trying to destroy the Tories and get some sort of coalition government in? Maybe have another election in 18 months' time as Theresa May collapses before the negotiations with the EU come to an end. They're scheduled to end in early 2019. So who knows what's going on? Vince Cable of the Lib Dems was on Andrew Marr too. And it's interesting this. I've got a couple of clips of it for you. This is Vince Cable speaking on this subject on the Andrew Marr show on BBC One earlier this morning.
Let's start with your exit from Brexit. Mm-hmm. At the moment, the economy is doing pretty well. There is a clear majority in the House of Commons for Brexit. The Prime Minister got a bigger majority than she expected on the first reading of that bill. And there seems to be no change, really, in the public mood. If anything, the public mood is hardening pro-Brexit. Where do you expect the change of mood to come from?
Well, I wouldn't say the economy is doing pretty well. It's not collapsed. Well, it hasn't collapsed, but we're getting...
Investment is up, unemployment is down,
actually,
employment is up.
Business investment isn't. We've had the, the biggest devaluation since the war,
which is
now feeding through into higher costs, which is one of the reasons it's the cut in real living standards, which is fueling this upsurge of concern about public sector pay. And we're getting a big exodus of talent. I mean, it's happening every day. I was in my hospital, local hospital, a few weeks ago. Their biggest crisis now is that their European staff, their nurses, are walking away. These are real things, and they're happening now, and we haven't yet left.
Across most of the picture, however, the economy is doing quite well. Are you not in the difficult position of being invested in economic failure?
No, absolutely not. I mean, there are a whole variety of outcomes. You know, it's possible that we could leave the European Union with only a relatively small amount of damage. It's possible. I don't think anybody imagines we could be better off by leaving, but they may minimise the damage. But we've seen that the government are completely divided as to whether to pursue this kind of soft Brexit option, and it probably isn't on the table anyway. But there are more extreme options where if we finish up crashing out, which I think is where Boris Johnson and his friends are, the economic damage could be enormous.
Right, let's analyse some of what he just said there, because it's very important. Vince Cable there. The economic damage could be enormous. We'll come back to that in a second. But Marr clearly said to Cable, it hasn't happened. When the referendum took place, before the referendum took place, the country was warned that a vote to leave would be instantly catastrophic. Instantly catastrophic. By Cable and by everybody else campaigning to remain. As Marr said, whatever you think about the economic figures put out by the government, and of course, plenty of room for shooting holes in them, as Marr said, Marr said things are improving slightly. I would argue that probably that isn't the case. When they put out these job figures, again, they are skewed by the fact that many of these jobs are zero-hour contract jobs. They are not stable. They are not secure jobs. They are temporary jobs. I accept all of that because I'm honest. You've got to be honest about it. But the disaster promised by those who said, if we leave, we're doomed, hasn't materialised. And now Vince Cable is reduced to saying that it could be catastrophic if we leave. Could be. Marr should jump all over that, but he doesn't. But to be fair to Marr, he does then tie Vince Cable up in knots about Cable's desire for a second referendum to ignore the will of the people, effectively, and to do it all over again. Marr takes him on, listen to this.
You have said several times now that you'd like the people to be given another choice, which means a second referendum. First of all, do you accept that for there to be a parliamentary stitch-up of some kind which stopped us leaving the EU would be democratically indefensible?
No, I think if you're going to delegitimise the public vote, which we've already had, I think we've got to have another one. And I think that simply doing it through Parliament isn't going to be adequate. I'm not a fan of referendums. I was critical of it in the first place. We've gone down that road, and I think that's the only way to carry the public is to give them another choice once we've seen what the facts are.
So when did you change your mind on the second referendum issue?
Well, I hadn't changed my mind.
Yes,
I
you said, have. No, sorry, I've got to read what you said.
Yes, what I said before was that I think we shouldn't just go back after the second referendum and have another one and re-vote. I know the quote you're going to produce.
What I'm now talking about is the future
once we know the facts about exit.
OK. Last year, you said the public have voted, and I think it's seriously disrespectful and politically utterly counterproductive to say, sorry, guys, you got it wrong, let's try again. But that is what you are now proposing.
No, absolutely not. No, what I said, I totally defend, absolutely right in that context. We'd had a vote.
But what is the second
decision had been made. We're not rerunning it. There's a difference between setting out on a journey, which was what that vote was about, and a destination when you know what...
So, Cable has just said to Andrew Marr, now Marr should jump all over him, he should really hammer him. He said, the vote in June 2016 was about setting out on a journey, not knowing the destination. See, this is a monumental lie, and Marr doesn't take him on in the way he should do. As has been proven time and time and time again, and I've got the audio to prove it. I'm not going to play it today because I'm tired of playing it. Everybody who voted... Let me repeat. Everybody who campaigned to remain. George Osborne. David Cameron. Vince Cable. That idiot who headed up the Lib Dems before Cable. Tim Farron. They were absolutely certain in their threats and in their dire warnings that leaving the EU meant leaving the single market and the customs union. Leaving meant leaving. So they can't now turn around and say, oh, people were setting out on a journey. They didn't really know what leave meant. Well, they did. I've played the audio thousands of times on the programme. The collated audio of all of these goons repeating time and again, we better not leave because leave means leave, right? This goes on for another few seconds. Have a listen.
When you know what's going to happen, when the negotiations are taking place. The Prime Minister's produced this rather ludicrous anarchine slogan about Brexit means Brexit. It doesn't. We know that there are massive differences of view. The whole point about Boris Johnson's intervention is that he's got an utterly and completely different view about what Brexit means from the Prime Minister and the rest of the Cabinet.
Right. So that's Vince Cable there on the Andrew Marr show earlier on. There's not really a lot more I'm going to add to that, really. I've said enough about Cable. Over the months since the UK voting public decided to leave the European Union. There's been a couple of questions on that. 52% of those who voted, not 52% of the country, that's Rich Mortimer who said, I voted Leave Richie. Was it 52% of the country or of the voting turnout? It was 52% of the turnout. Absolutely right. Good morning to Steve. Good morning to Joe Wood. That's Steve, Leeds United. Good morning to David Kona. David says, don't you think that some of the eyewitnesses had a little too much to say about Friday's incident? And I said to David, yes, you're always suspicious in terms of the way these things are reported, but it doesn't prove anything. It just does not prove anything, one way or the other. Blue Theresa May on Twitter says, the 18-year-old arrested in Dover was a refugee foster child, allegedly assisted by MI5. That's alleged, or alleged even, by Blue Theresa May. Well, again, Blue Theresa May, where's the proof that the refugee foster child currently in custody was assisted by MI5? How do you know that? Because if you know that for a fact, I'd love you to share that information with me and I'll broadcast it to our audience. You see, it's speculation. It doesn't mean it isn't true. I'm not saying it isn't, but it's speculation. Sadly. And this is why 99.99% of what claims to be the independent media is garbage. Utter garbage. And I will do a program next week, again, on identity politics, which I've been covering a lot. And the Truth or Community is another identity group of identitarians. And it's incredibly dangerous. And I'm going to get into this in the coming days. I've been touching on this for months now. But let's have some evidence before we make sweeping statements about what did and what didn't happen. Susan tweets, yes, Brexit means Brexit, please. Can we just get on with it? Just leave. 100% right. 15 minutes to the top of the hour. Quick break back to talk about the Irish broadcaster George Hook, which is very important. This is Sunday View live on davidicke.com. So effectively, it's quarter to midday UK time. Back in a minute.
FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with Orgone Energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's vibration.com/Richie. Thank you.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Welcome back to the program. It's exactly 11:47 and 20 seconds a.m. I think there's like a 7 second delay on the reception of the Richie Allen Show. When you receive it, it's like 7 seconds later or something like that. I don't know. Doesn't matter, does it? Stay in touch with davidicke.com, richieallen.co.uk, and do listen to the wonderful programming of fabradiointernational.com. My name is Richie Allen. Thank you for joining me. The weather is improving. My mate Jean Ann tells me it's nice in Ireland. It's nice. Or at least on the west coast of Ireland anyway, some of the most beautiful and spectacular countryside, scenery, topography in the world, the west of Ireland. It's getting better here in Manchester, so it is. Right, let's move on. Might get myself into trouble here, but we're going to go for it anyway. Got to scroll back. This is in the Irish Sunday Independent today. George Hook is unlikely to return to his show on News Talk, and his career at the radio station is now effectively over. Sources at the station yesterday disclosed to the Sunday Independent that lawyers were determining whether Mr. Hook had breached his contract by his controversial rape case broadcast. Mr. Hook, 76, who has also engaged lawyers, is understood to believe he was not in breach of contract, and negotiations are now expected to turn to his payoff this week. A News Talk source said, "The hardest thing is to get somebody off the air. That has been done. George Hook is off the air. Once they are off, the hardest thing for them is to get back on air. The chances of George Hook returning to the air at News Talk are now slim to none." Station insiders said the investigation was expected to reach a conclusion early this week. Meanwhile, there is concern among News Talk staff that if the matter isn't resolved sooner rather than later, collateral damage could be caused to other shows. Mother of mercy. A source told the Sunday Independent, all week our inboxes have been full of people saying, we really like your show, but we can't listen to News Talk anymore after what has happened. The source told the Sunday Independent, these are quotes, staff in here are nervous enough about their future, and now with this backlash and sponsors pulling out, some of us feel that George should do the decent thing and just go. The managing editor of News Talk, Patricia Monaghan, yesterday rubbished claims that there was systemic sexism at the station. She said the idea that female representation failed to count if it is not heard on air was insulting. Yeah. Somebody who used to work for News Talk, or still does in some capacity, is a woman called Sheila Shoiga. I tweeted Sheila the other day. She didn't respond. I didn't think she was. Sheila was bitching, saying that she fell out with the station, or there was some problem, some issue, because she was put on at weekends or late nights or something like that. Jesus Christ, Sheila, it couldn't be that you just weren't good enough. Could that be it? Could it be that you're just not good enough as a presenter? You don't have anything going for you as a presenter. You've no charisma, no ability to engage with an audience, no ability to connect with somebody on a one-to-one basis. Maybe that's it, Sheila. Maybe it's not because you're a woman, maybe. Maybe it is because she's a woman. I don't know, because I know nothing about News Talk or its hiring and firing policies. Identitarians are taking over the world. We'll come back to that in a minute. Now, I was driven mad on Friday. I was driven so mad, I phoned my friend, Jean-Anne Crowley, and I ranted and I vented and I vented and I ranted. And I said, you know, there are times there are things I'd like to say, but I don't say, not because I... Well, this is a proper contradiction in terms now. I was just about to say, not because I censor myself when it's glaringly obvious that if I stop myself from saying something, I am censoring myself. But the reason I don't do it is because we've gathered through our 3 years of putting this programme on air, we have begun to reach Mr. and Mrs. Murphy and Mr. and Mrs. Smith, who used to think we were crazy, conspiratorial, reptilian talking lunatics, are beginning to listen to programmes like this. So I'm more careful about what I say, lest I lose, you know, that connection with people who are just about starting to wonder what the hell is going on. So sometimes I stop and I don't go as far as I want to go. And I don't matter, remember. It doesn't matter what I say or what I don't say. I just have an opinion like everybody else. There are times I really want to get stuck in. All right. Does a woman called Dil Wickramasinghe sincere apologies? I've tried to figure out, listening to audio, how to pronounce the lady's surname properly, but I can't figure it out. It's spelled W-I-C-K-R-E-M-A-S-I-N-G-H-E. Dil Wickramasinghe or Wickramasinghe. Wickramasinghe, maybe. Dil Wickramasinghe, I'm going to say anyway. She's an employee of News Talk, and last Friday she said she was appalled and disgusted by the comments made by George Hook on his show on News Talk, and she threatened her employers that she would not show up to work and do her weekend programme unless he was fired. That drove me mad. As a union man all my life, and I don't identify as a socialist, I don't identify as a union member, I identify as nothing, right? So I'm not identifying as a union man. But I've always believed in solidarity in the workplace. And it is unconscionable to me that somebody, whether they dislike Mr. X or Mrs. Y or not, would go to their station and demand they are fired. So Dil Wickremesinghe hosts Global Village on Saturday evenings. I'm sure it's a right hoot. Said that she would leave if he wasn't fired. This is on Friday. She also is strongly critical of station management and has accused bosses of being unsupportive and unwelcoming of female presenters. In her statement, Dil Wickremesinghe said she was a victim of sexual abuse when she was 13, saying her abuser was a 70-year-old man. I couldn't give a rat's arse about the sexual abuse suffered by Dil Wickremesinghe when she was 13 in the context of the story that we are talking about, the firing or the suspension of George Hook. Sorry for anybody who was sexually abused. Can't imagine it's peachy. Can't imagine it's very easy to live with. What has it got to do with George Hook? Who said, how dare he, that number one, the girl who was raped did not deserve it. Number two, she didn't ask for it. Number three, the fucker who did it should be locked up. But number four, he said, don't we need to have a conversation about personal responsibility? Waking up on the bathroom floors of hotels, completely unaware of where you are and whom you are with, completely incapable of defending yourself. Right? What has that got to do with women are not being supported at News Talk and I was abused when I was 13? Stick that up your arse! So far up your arse, it never comes down again. It's got nothing to do with it. Nothing. This is identitarianism again, writ large. Me, 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 me. Gilad Atzmon writes in Being in Time. And by the way, Miss Wickremesinghe identifies as a gay lesbian woman. She identifies as a gay lesbian woman. Contemporary ID politics is an exercise in uncritical self-love, writes Gilad Atzmon, and in that he is right. 100% right. How dare you or anybody else say anything or offer an opinion on anything which triggers my sensibilities and causes me to go into meltdown. This is the world we're living in now, you see. This Sri Lankan woman, born in Rome, who's been in Ireland since 2000, this woman who identifies as a gay lesbian woman, used to live in Bahrain with an Irish woman, came to Ireland in 2000, says she was sexually abused. This, you see, this woman, this person, is now dictating the discourse around George Hook and whether or not George Hook was okay to say what George Hook said or didn't say. What happened to Ireland, this revolutionary country, which fought off invaders for hundreds of years, when Sri Lankan gay lesbian women are now dictating to the country? Don't speak in case it offends me. You know what you can do, love? Fuck back to Rome or to Sri Lanka or to Bahrain or wherever you came from. I'll tell you what, love. Try and be a gay lesbian woman in Bahrain. See how you get on there. This is sickening to me, this. This is sickening. It is dangerous. It is destructive. It is destroying journalism. It is destroying free speech. It is terrifying other writers who look at what happened to Kevin Myers, look at what happened to George Hook, and decide, well, I won't finish this article. I'll bin this and I'll start something else. I might just get into trouble. Hook said, personal responsibility. You're raped. Who could imagine unless you were raped, the feeling of embarrassment, the feeling of shame, the feeling of hurt, the feeling of pain, the feelings of misery. Who could understand that? Nobody. Unless it happened to you. So was Hook triggering all of those people who have been raped by saying the guy should go to prison, she didn't ask for it, she didn't deserve it. But come on, ladies. Don't put yourself in that position. The feminazis came running out. We should be able to get pissed. We should be able to get pissed like men. We should be able to sleep around like men. Yes, feminazis. Get pissed, sleep around with men all you want. Don't go crying rape in the morning then. Unbelievable. It looks very much like this girl was raped, was sexually assaulted. She got so drunk she couldn't stand up, she couldn't speak, she couldn't sit down, she was so pissed. And put herself, I'm going to say it, by doing that, she made herself vulnerable to the sort of predator that she encountered that night. What is so wrong with discussing that? So the Dil Wickrema Sings, or whatever the fuck her name is, and every other minority group that were triggered by Hook, and who want to pervert, to stop, to prevent, to silence, to censor any discourse, any rational conversation, they can take a run and jump. I really am angry about this. I can't believe that in my country, minorities, now minorities are as entitled to, as, not more, as entitled to human rights, free speech, freedom to travel, freedom to work, freedom to procreate, freedom to do whatever you want. They have as much of a right to do that as anybody else, but you don't have more right. And how can it be right that they can say, we must live in a world where we can never be challenged, we can never be questioned, we can never be offended. I would have replied to Dil Wickrema Singh or Singh on Friday if I was the station manager at News Talk, and I would have said, we'll send your personal effects to your house or to your apartment. Fuck off, love. You don't threaten me as a station manager that because you don't like something said by a presenter on another programme, you're not going to do your programme. She'd be unemployed today. End of story. What sort of scumbag tries to get a guy fired for saying something just because you don't disagree with him? I'm boiling mad here. But that's what we've been reduced to in Ireland. You know, and it's what we've been reduced to everywhere else, to be honest, because RT have run a story today, they ran it yesterday as well, and it's about this progressive agenda, this PC silence opinion, silence diversity of opinion. Ironically, they claim this is about protecting diversity. It isn't. It's about destroying diversity. It's about destroying multitudes of different opinions. RT ran a story today and yesterday about a man working in Oregon, a British conductor, a musical conductor working in Oregon, who was fired from a musical festival in Oregon. He was fired as the conductor for racism, except he's not done or said anything that is remotely racist. This is RT with the story, and I don't think you'll believe your ears.
Another race-related scandal in the US. This time, a British conductor has been fired from a prestigious festival in the state of Oregon for mocking the accent of his friend, an African-American tenor. However, the singer himself says the joke was innocent.
He's been victimised and I'm very upset about it. It was an innocent joke that has been entirely taken out of context. I'm from the Deep South and Matthew often makes fun of my southern accent, just as I often make fun of his British accent.
The backstory here, it's understood a woman overheard the two friends' conversation, then she reported it. After that, Matthew Hall's contract with the University of Oregon was terminated, despite the fact he's been the artistic director of its music festival since 2014. His dismissals provoked outrage online. Pressure on the festival organisers now then to reinstate Hall's is growing, with other musicians rallying to his support. Tenor Reginald Mobley fears his friend's career, though, is going to suffer after being branded a racist. Political satirist Emmy Horowitz says that the word racist has lost its meaning and power through overuse too these days.
The reality is that the social justice crusade that we've been seeing now over the past few years has been eating its own. Where are we as a society? You know, it's stories like this and it's the use of language like this, which has essentially denuded all meaning from the word racist. They've hollowed out the power of that word. And the implications of that are massive. And most notably, one of the biggest implications is that when you're really trying to call out racists for truly being racist, that doesn't have any meaning anymore. It doesn't have any power anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that is the definition of madness, isn't it? The guy, the British conductor, took the piss out of his mate's accent. The black dude said that there was nothing racist in it. He said, we're great mates and I rip the piss out of his accent all the time. But it doesn't matter because a white woman was triggered. It's racist. Therefore, there must be something done about it. So the conductor, whose head is probably still spinning, he probably still can't believe it. Probably expects to wake up anytime soon. Was I really fired for taking the mickey out of my mate's accent? Have I been deemed a racist for engaging in a bit of banter with my old pal in the orchestra? Jesus, I have. What am I going to do? Madness. Utter madness. It's going unchallenged outside of the alternative media. It is going unchallenged. Kevin Myers, George Hook, the conductor of this orchestra in Oregon, who within commercial or national media is standing up for these people? Who? I'm not going to give that boring lecture that I've given every time we've done a story like this about the right, about the responsibility of the opinion piece writer, the responsibility of the political commentator or the social commentator. That responsibility he and she, they have to challenge your perceptions about yourself, to challenge the opinions you yourself have about everything, from politics, from sport, from, as I said, social affairs, whatever. Isn't it their job to challenge and to provoke? Because by challenging and provoking, it's asking you and me to constantly revisit the positions that we hold dear. You know, is there new evidence about something that challenges my definite opinion on something? Is there? Christ, let's have a look at it then. But no, you see. Because the rise of identity politics, as I've talked about, and I do recommend you do three things. Number one, watch the Adam Curtis film, The Century of the Self. Number two, read Gilad Atzmon's Being in Time. And number three, David's forthcoming book, which will be released in November, is taking this head on. I would get that when it comes out. This is where it's at now. Gilad talks in Being in Time about the earliest form of Zionism. And you might be surprised to hear this. But Gilad correctly identifies in Being in Time that the very early forms of Zionism were characterized by some very intensive self-criticism. Now, most people won't believe that unless they understand where Zionism originated. But it's true. But it's been reduced to an exercise in uncritical self-love, he says. And he also points out in his book, which we did an interview on, and I recommend, that ID politics encourages the identitarian to believe it's always somebody else who is at fault. You can never, never, never be wrong. You derive your opinions, you derive your feelings, your thoughts on any given issue from the group that you identify with. There is no room for analysing that at all, for self-analysis, for analysing your own social group, whatever it is, gay, lesbian, black, white, Palestinian, Zionist, white, Asian, Muslim, Jew, it doesn't matter. There's no room for self-analytical behaviour. So you have the gay, lesbian, Sri Lankan woman who identifies as a gay lesbian who was abused, and that's a terrible thing. So do you allow men and women whom were abused, do you allow them write the rules forevermore on how you can talk about sexual abuse? Is that what we do? So we say to Dil Wickremesinghe and everybody else who was ever abused, right, you tell us what we can and what we can't say. We will enshrine that in law, and for the rest of our fucking lives we'll tiptoe on eggshells around you. Is that what it is? Do you know what? It is what it is. And what comes out of that? Listen to this week's Dot Connector with David Icke. What comes out of that? Self-censorship. Terror. Genuine terror about expressing your feelings or your opinions, your moods, your emotions about any issue. You won't, for fear of what happened to Kevin Myers, to George Hook, and to the conductor in Oregon. Minority identitarian groups. This is the agenda we're seeing rolled out now all over the world. Progressive is the word for it. That's what they call themselves. It is completely not progressive. It is fascist. It is devastatingly harmful to free speech, and it is destroying lives. Ask George Hook, ask Kevin Myers, ask the conductor in Oregon, ask everybody else who was forced out of their job because some identitarian was triggered by something they said. Nobody in Irish media is saying, why didn't Dil Wickremesinghe or whatever her name is go on George Hook's programme? When I worked at Talk Radio Europe, when I worked for WLR many years ago, we would occasionally take issue with something our fellow presenter said or did. We would go on their programmes. Isn't that right? Isn't that democratic? Isn't that journalistic? Why didn't she go on the programme and say, George, Personally, George, I'm a bit worried about that. I was raped. I don't want to think you're blaming. But you see, Dil Wickremesinghe couldn't do that because Dil Wickremesinghe is a pathological liar. She knows that George Hook wasn't blaming the victim. Deep down, she knows that. She knows it. So she's she is the vilest of creatures on planet Earth. She knows damn well that Hook did not mean and didn't actually say the victim was in any way responsible. He said, why can't we have a discussion about getting rat-arsed pissed to the point you can't move? This was after he repeated several times, didn't deserve it, didn't ask for it, the guy should go to prison. I've ranted enough about that. For now, but we'll hear more anon. Hook will never broadcast for News Talk again, there's no doubt about that. I hope, sincerely, that Hook is serious. I'm sure he's got the money to do it. So if he's got the money, he should do it in taking them to court for wrongful dismissal, even though he hasn't been dismissed. Take them to some tribunal for wrongful suspension and be done with the Dil Wickremesinghes of the world and everybody else like her. Tyrants, fascists, the enemies of free speech. Take them on head on. That's it for Sunday View. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Monday, at 7 p.m. UK time. That's 7 p.m. UK time tomorrow for the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Until then, you look after yourselves and one another. And that's it for me. Thanks for listening to Sunday View. Have a great Sunday. We'll do it all again, as I said, tomorrow. Yes, yes. I'm a bit distracted. I thought I had some music to go out with, but I don't. See you tomorrow. Bye.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.